And now, here I am, Maurice, from A Handy Man's Haven, transmitting in the A Handy Man Haven studio, radio studio, on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. Our production engineer today is Kent. Welcome to the show, Kent, and your fine expertise in manipulating all those rheostat switches on a monstrous plate of switches that he has in front of him. So it's good to be with you folks today. It's a rather very, very pleasant day on the outside, as it is by living in paradise. That's what I call it. Southern Arizona is considered paradise. If you ever traveled throughout the United States or the world, I can contest in my personal behavior or personal effects as a rather, I can't even talk right now. But anyway, my personal taste is that the Southern Arizona is really an outstanding place to live in many of the other countries that I have visited throughout my career. So welcome to the show. Some of the general information on A Handy Man's Haven. Our Tucson location is at 1724 South 6th Avenue. That place is about six blocks south of 22nd Street on 6th Avenue. Our building is between 27th and 28th Street, our showroom, I should say. We have over 23,000 square feet of facility. We're the big yellow building, pretty hard to miss, and most people are saying today, well, we just happened to be driving by and saw your building, so it looked unique, and so we're going to stop in and see what you had. And they're very pleasantly surprised. So everybody is welcome. And for those that have been listening to the radio show, as have known me for years, and our company, the ones that have visited me this past week, I thank you very much for taking the time and stopping in to give us some conversation, ask some questions, and we'll cover probably some of those throughout the activity today. Our phone number in Tucson is 520-624-7200. Our hours of operation are from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. We are closed on Sundays and through various holidays throughout the year. I imagine our next closure is going to be around May during Memorial Day, a long stretch of time for us and our company of not having a day off from that standpoint. We do have a web presence on www.ahandymanshaven.com. I like to tell people it's ahandymanshaven.com, and that's because there are no apostrophes in web addresses or emails, which drives the digital internet web system just crazy. We do have a Green Valley location, and our location in Green Valley is at 125 West Calle de las Tiendas, Suite 103 Alpha. And one of the easiest ways of recognizing where we are, many of the places in Green Valley or people in Green Valley have visited Manuel's Mexican Food Restaurant. By the way, this is not an advertisement for them, but they do have outstanding food. When you walk out the front door, if you continue walking across the street, you'll approach where 125 West Calle de las Tiendas is, what, Suite 103 Alpha. The phone number in Green Valley is 520-369-4858. The hours of operation are Monday through Friday, one day less than in Tucson due to the extensive activities we have going on down there. Then it's from about 8:30 in the morning to about 4 in the afternoon. We do respect the activity level that is well known down in the Green Valley for the patrons there for the afternoon tea seance that goes on continually. So stop on by, give us a ring, a ding-a-ling, or whatever it may happen to be, and we'll try to answer all your questions and solve all your problems for you concerning designing of kitchens, bathrooms, or cabinet placement within your home for whatever reason you may like to have them, and countertops associated with that. We have, throughout the year of 2019, we have probably sold in excess of 80,000 cabinets throughout the year. We bring quite a few of them in on a regular basis. That's a rather outstanding number from that standpoint. Along with that, we are doing extensive modifications of the cabinetry that come in because of the requests from various customers. We basically could install or probably show you how to install all the basic organizational equipment that is available for you to purchase, of which we handle several pieces in our store, as well as those that were not handled. We can acquire rather rapidly, and with your cabinetry, we can install those. So keep us in mind for that type of activity. We carry and work with 5 different cabinet companies throughout the United States and also those that are imported. We have a couple imported lines that do outstanding cabinetry from that standpoint and do comply with the strict EPA requirements as well as California's EPA requirements, which are more strict than the federal government's. So these cabinets are normally distributed in every state in the United States, California having the most restrictive Environmental Protection Agency standards that most everybody has to comply with if they plan on selling anything within the state of California. The other thing that we're doing a lot of, this past week has been rather sensational concerning that, is that many customers are coming in and are requesting their cabinet doors, or upper cabinet doors as an example, of having glass installed in them for whatever reasons. They want to decorate their home, give it a different presentation. They want to see what's in their cabinets. And I like to mention to people that when you go visit somebody's home and you're looking for a glass so you can get a glass of water or something, you may have to open up 10, 15, 20 different types of doors in order to find the glasses. So with glass in your cabinet doors, you could look right in them and say, oh, there's where the glasses are. And you open up one door, and you'll be well on your way. So lots of things going on within A Handyman's Haven is from that standpoint. I do like to talk about countertops. That is one of our mainstays from that standpoint. We do handle the standard countertops, which we call fully formed or post-formed countertops, which come in specified dimensions as well as with a integrated backsplash. The technology of the equipment available today to put these types of countertops together is extremely extensive. There are many edges available in the fronts for those as well as the top of the backsplash. But that's probably one of the best countertops that are available today. It is basically all laminate countertops are antimicrobial. In other words, they're non-porous or hyperallergenic, and they're unable to build up mold and algae. There's a big discussion continually going on about whether they need to be sealed or not. Laminate countertops do not need to be sealed in that respect. So we can accommodate that for you. I'll talk a little bit more about that as the hour goes on, especially after our break that's coming up at the present time. It's hard to believe that we've already been on the air 15 minutes. And Kent, our very fine production engineer, is ready to shift us over and let you hear the interlude between the first and the second segment. So, Kent, thank you very much, and take it away. Welcome back to the Hammer Time Radio Show. Again, I'm Maurice from A Handyman's Haven, transmitting in the A Handyman's Haven radio studio on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. So we've been talking about laminate countertops. We do handle many other types of countertops, such as any natural stone, as well as many quartz-producing companies throughout the world and their countertops associated with that. Many of the natural stone countertops, if not all of them, are very porous. From that nature, they do require some ongoing preventative maintenance in order to assist in their proper presentation for your food working in the kitchen. So specialty laminates from that standpoint, or laminate countertops, we normally do that. We label those as seamless countertops, or they're without a cut-through. And what I mean by that is that the laminate and the substrate that holds the laminate in position is cut straight through. In other words, the two tops have to be bolted together. We try to let the customers know that there are countertops available that we can produce for them if they so desire and get rid of the 90-degree, 45-degree slice through in the corners, as well as if you have an extremely long countertop, we can move the laminate seam away from the substrate seam, and therefore you're not going to have the separation that occurs many, many times, if not almost all the times. I know just recently I went out and measured for a countertop, and it looked like it was a handmade, what I'm calling a handmade countertop, a locally produced countertop. And they did put a, what we call a splice seam in one area of the countertop, and it is separated, and then now they have a big edge. And the downfall of the entire thing is this relatively light colored countertop, and by virtue of continually washing the countertop, it collects dirt on the edge because of the separation level, and therefore it's built up a big dirt edge right there, and the customer is not very happy with this dirt edge. But that is a common technique, but we in our facilities at A Handyman's Haven, we try to misalign the laminate countertop from the substrate or what's going to hold the laminate in position, that so there is no separation that can occur. We do have some stiff requirements in that, number one, we have to be able to get that countertop into someone's kitchen, and this may require some, as I say, some physical countertop gymnastics in order to get it in. Many times we can't, so therefore we really can't provide the customer with that type of a countertop. Countertops themselves, we market laminate countertops with the integrated backsplash, 10 feet of countertop for $90. We'll do all the straight cuts that you may need in case you do require straight cuts and your multiple pieces required at complimentary. If we have to do a splice through or a miter type of split on your countertop for you, there is an additional charge, as well as if you want us to provide you the finished ends of those exposed portions of the countertop, there is a slight charge for that also. If you want to do all that yourself, we could sell you the material that you need to provide the finished ends, and you can be on your way. So keep us in mind for that type of activity. I'd like to talk a little bit about islands at the present time. We are getting some requests again for many islands in your kitchen, and customers are requesting rolling islands, so to speak. So basically speaking, there are two types of islands as we classify them. One is an island that you can roll and move throughout the kitchen. I have one of those at my own personal home. And then there's ones that are fixed to the floor. There are two separate requirements according to code with the islands. A rolling island, in this case, basically does not need to have electrical attached to it, and you can understand why. If you want to roll it around, you don't want these electrical cords all over the place, so therefore electricity is not required. And obviously, if you want to have your sink in your island or your stove, whatever it may happen to be, then that makes it tough and go for acquiring that. The sink obviously requires a drain system. It has to be sloped to hit the main drain and go on its way. So therefore, that type of an island has to be fixed to the floor. And once it becomes fixed to the floor, non-movable, then it does have to have electricity, a wire to it, of which the stove would require, or a gas line if you happen to have a gas stove. And that in itself would also require maybe a cut-through on your concrete floor, or cutting the floor joists if it's wood, or maybe if it's a good post and beam operation, you can descend below that. But you're going to have a constant slope that's going to allow the water and the sludge to drain into your sewerage system. So therefore, it does have to have a downward slope attached with that. So fixed islands will require electrical, and a sink will require a plumbing aspect, which can incur quite an additional expense from that standpoint. Rolling islands, the only difficulty with a rolling island is that we have to make sure that it is going to be stable. The stability with rollout trays, as an example, when you open the doors of the island that stick out, if they're heavily loaded, there is a possibility for tipping. So we try to arrange the weight of the rolling island to be extremely heavy, and therefore hopefully the rolling tray, when it opens up, is not going to cause the island to tip. One recommendation would be like file cabinets as an example. There are many safety devices in file cabinets that you cannot open up more than one drawer at a time. Or if it happens to be the big, wide file-type folding cabinets with folders and everything else, again, you cannot open up more than one drawer at one time period. The whole thing will tip over, and many times you create a tremendous amount of injury if somebody happens to be in a way. So keep us in mind for laminate countertops, which are antimicrobial, hyperallergenic, non-porous. The only maintenance is going to be wiping them clean, either with your rag or soap and water or bleach or whatever you'd like to use to keep it sterilized from that standpoint. On a island island or a countertop as an example, if you want to put some electrical outlets, if it's an island as an example, most people wonder, where is the electrical outlets going to go? Well, there is a requirement in a kitchen that electrical outlets cannot be more than 48 inches apart. Many of you have noticed throughout the years that the appliances that we use today have very short electrical cords on them, and that's the main reason. They do not want you to use the appliances and have it stretched across the walkway with a big extension cord. Does that prevent you from using an extension cord? No, it doesn't, because you have a choice to do that whatever you want, but you are creating a safety hazard in case some young child or some adult comes through and not see the extension cord and all of a sudden knocks everything off the island or wherever it may happen to be. So not a good idea, folks. So keep away from doing that as far as the safety in the home goes. So with the anchored island or with the anchored cabinets in wherever it may happen to be, your garage or your craft room or artist room, etc., there is a way of putting the electrical outlets in the top of a countertop. It's basically called a wet area power grommet system. Now, that's very important because if you happen to have those in the vicinity of your sink arrangement, you surely do not want to have water drip in the receptacle area itself. That could create somewhat of a disaster. So there is a pop-up kitchen power grommet available. It's from the Doug Mockett. That's M-O-C-K-E-T-T and Company. It's UL listed. It's used in any countertops that where there may be a water problem, or you just like to have your receptacle be hid away so you could push on the top of it and it can open up, or you can push it down and have it closed. This will, when it's closed, will prevent the spills from entering the area from that standpoint. There is two tamper-resistant 20-amp receptacles mounted in this type of power grommet. So keep that in mind. It's basically from the Doug Mockett and Company who builds and markets that type of countertop. The other thing that's interesting on countertops is that there is a bacteria killing under cabinet lighting. So, is there bacteria in the kitchen? Well, anytime that you have food particles, you have air circulating around, you're going to have bacteria floating around. So the Evolution Lighting Company, which I believe is an LLC, has a light that they call Illumi. That's Echo Lima Lima Uniform Mike India. It's a bacteria killing under cabinet lighting. So that means your cabinets that are mounted on the wall, you can mount this unit, the lighting system, underneath that cabinet. And that would be very appropriate. Not only would you like to have lights underneath your upper cabinets, but you can also put major power strips. I happen to have one in my house that's 6 feet long that has six receptacles attached to it, and we can enter into six different appliances. It's on a big, heavy circuit. That's so it's not going to tax out the amperage load of the circuit breaker itself. When you get through using the unit, you just pull the plug out, and there you are. Makes it really nice. You don't have receptacles anyplace, and nobody can see it. You can also use under cabinet lighting, maybe just like I just talked about, bacteria killing under cabinet lighting by the Evolution Lighting Company, and that will help you destroy all the bacteria that may be floating around, especially during certain seasons when there is a lot of bacteria or viruses that are available. So keep that in mind, folks, when you're accomplishing that. LED lighting, I noticed the other day there are some battery-operated LED lighting systems with the pucks. Other than exchanging batteries and keeping a bunch of AA batteries around in order to keep it powered, it may become an easy way of setting up your DC-operated system. Other than that, you're going to have to run DC power through the individual transformers that come along that transfer the alternating current to direct current under a 12-volt system, sort of like what your Christmas tree lights do. They're all through transformers. And many things in the past, when you charge cell phones, a cell phone charger, and various other aspects, use DC power because it's less expensive to operate, easy to get things taken care of. As most of us know, you can set up your automobile through the power supplies, or as we call them, the cigarette lighter ports. That's for years past. They call them power supplies today. And that's the DC power that can charge your cell phone from that standpoint. Folks, we come across the end of our second segment here, transmitting with in the A. Handyman's Haven radio studio on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. And we'll pick up after the next break and continue with our conversation. Welcome back to the Hammer Time Radio Show. I am Maurice from A. Handyman's Haven. We're transmitting today in the A. Handyman's Haven radio studio on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. The next thing I'd like to talk about, we mentioned this in the past, is a storage of what everybody sort of classifies as a wine rack. That's how it's advertised. But, you know, another name for this would be your bottle rack. We have many bottles in the kitchen that are not containing wine from that standpoint, or alcohol, but that would be a common thing that most people use. I know that I have a wine rack on our upper kitchen cabinetry, and we had about 6 inches left over, and the contractor I was working with said, well, why don't we just put a wine rack here? Well, I gave it about 2 seconds of thought, and I said, yep, outstanding idea. That's a good place to put the wine. So you could put your more choice wines that you like to have in the evening meal, daily meal, or whenever it's appropriate for you, or when guests come over. Or you could just use it as a bottle rack. You can get olive oil as an example. You can get olive oil bottles that are about the size of a fifth, which would be a typical bottle of wine. You can get balsamic vinegars that are the same thing. There's many other oils and many other products that come in those types of bottles. Today, many of them are plastic, but seems as though the alcohol content bottles are all in glass still. They do have a different capping arrangement, either the metal cap or a cork. But you can create that wine rack system where the bottles will tilt forward and keep the cork well wet in order to keep the air from penetrating into the bottle and destroy your wine for you. I guess in one aspect, it really doesn't destroy the wine. It may not become drinkable, but it could be a tremendous accent as a vinegar. I can tell you I became alerted to that many years ago when I had about a quarter inch of wine left in a bottle. And I says, well, it's no sense in packing this up and moving with it. I'll just take the cork off and drink it. Only to find out it was like pure vinegar. So if you really want to taste some wine vinegar that's been sitting around for a while, just let a little bit of wine left over in a bottle, and you'll have some very good balsamic wine vinegar, so to speak, for your salad dressing. So we do have a lot of wine racks available, either flat wine racks. We have wine racks that will go into cabinetry. Many of these items can be mounted in your present cabinet. All we need to know is the basic size of the cabinet that you have, and we can determine what type of wine rack to put in. Any base cabinets can hold wine racks also. They may have special racks, wine pull-out racks that are available, but if they're not available, we can put roll-out trays in it that can be wine racks, either float the wine horizontally from left to right or from front to back, depending upon what depth you would like to have. We can put them on full extension glides for you, and we can probably put three or four or five of them within a base cabinet. That's true with your existing base cabinets also. One of the other unique features that we did recently is that a customer had 15 inches of space that was left over from their construction behind a cabinet that was going up against the wall. Now, the cabinet did not touch the wall. It was 15 inches away from the wall because that's where they wanted it designed. But after a period of time, they got concerned with that wasted space. So we came up with a wine rack system that needed 15 inches of space. It holds 20 bottles of wine or any sort of bottle system that you may want to use. I guess you could call it a bottle rack. And that's what they have set that system up in their home. So a great way of doing things, lots of ways of storaging facilities that you may have. And with your upper cabinets, there is enough space below it to put a flat front-to-back storage system with several bottles that can go underneath your entire upper cabinet system. So keep all this in mind, folks, when you want to update your cabinetry. It may not require a brand-new kitchen from that standpoint, which can become a little bit more daunting on the utilization of your financial sources. And we can assist you in coming up with a solution to each and every one of those. If you'd like to enter in the conversation today, a good reminder would be give us a call at 520-790-2040 at the A. Henny Man's Haven Radio Studio, and you'll have be live on the air as we talk about whatever situation you'd like to talk about. Hopefully it has to do with remodeling and construction. I don't profess to be too much of an expert on some of the other subjects that are available today, nor maybe do I want to get involved with those and have a heated talk discussion concerning that. One of the other organizational equipments available, most of us know about the pull-out trash systems that's around. We do have one of those on display at the store, by the way. But the RevaShelf company presently, RevaShelf.com, R-E-V-A-S-H-E-L-F, that's RevaShelf, .com, they happen to have odor-reducing waste containers. And we've had many people discuss with us that they wouldn't want to put composting material basically in one of these pull-out systems that's underneath your kitchen counter. Well, there is now a odor-reducing bin that's available. It's a self-contained feature that is situated right with the pull-out waste system. The unique clamping mechanism that they have prevents the odors from escaping, while the carbon filter helps neutralize offending scents. I don't know what they mean by offending scents. And that is like the penny as an example with an S in front of it and pronounced the same way as scents. Including with each unit are compostable bags and a no-mess trash carriage. The containers are available in three different frame choices for the drawer and or wood or and or under the sink type arrangements. There are also lids available for many of the containers that RevaShelf has. And not only can you purchase one of those containers with the lid systems, but that can be utilized from that fashion. And as far as that goes, they also have diaper containers, which are normally made out of metal. And you can put the good-smelling sensing sauce in, sensing, nose-type sensing, in the container that will help deter that. Now, I don't know whether I would want to put a diaper container in a kitchen, but that may be a good place to put it in the bathroom from that standpoint. And any so-called, as we label them, waste containers can also be used as hampers. So whether you want a hamper in your closet, whether you want a hamper in your bathroom or whatever it may happen to be, you can get multiple containers We can put normally two of them in a 15 or 18 inch wide container or cabinet system. When it gets up around 24, we can actually put four containers in there. So as an example, if you have four children and you want them to keep their clothes separate for washing, as so they don't get it mixed up when, guess who? The child does the laundry. Keep that in mind, folks. They can keep it all separated in these different containers, and you can also separate them by colors. Okay, the whites go here, the pinks go here, the blacks go over here, and so on and so forth. So another addition from that standpoint, that you can do your present kitchen without overhauling your entire kitchen. So give us a ring at A Handyman's Haven, and we'll try to get you set up with what you want, or come and stop in, and we'll take it from that standpoint. Renewable hardwood serving boards. A hardwood serving board can really be made out of any type of wood. I know I've made a whole bunch of what I call lap boards as an example, or they can be classified as serving boards, out of just plywood and use contact paper in order to cover them to make them look rather attractive. When you get tired of the design that you pick, go down and get another set of contact paper and change the surface of the thing, and you have some beautiful looking things. There are also, we have some cutting boards, as we call them. They wouldn't necessarily be serving boards. We can get some wider ones if you want, but we have them made out of mesquite wood. They are pretty heavy and not necessarily bulky, but they are a good chunk of mesquite wood. They're about 1.5 to 2 inches thick, and they're in the vicinity of 12 by 12, 15 by 15 inches in dimensions. Excellent for solo cutting anywhere that you may like to have them. So, serving boards, depending upon what you're trying to do, is serving boards is by the John Booz company. Booz is not spelled like the alcohol, but it's like you're booing somebody. It's Baker Oscar Sierra. They're handcrafted on one solid piece of renewable and sustainable hardwood. The selections include hard rock maple, American cherry, American black walnut, and display the very excellent detailed grain patterns of those types of woods. They are available in various sizes, and they are reversible boards in that you could use the top or the bottom of them from that standpoint. These type of serving boards are basically like a paddle that you would have in your home if you happen to be the type of parental control you have, where we don't spare the rod around our house. As they say, a spare rod develops a spoiled child. That was an old-time adage. I guess today you would be going to jail for that type of activity. But I would venture to say that on occasions, a young lad may get spanked, and I would hate to think that they would happen to have a paddle of this nature. I do remember back in my early years in high school or college, not necessarily high school, or college, I should say, but in elementary school, each teacher had one of these serving boards. They didn't call them a serving board, but they looked like a serving board. They were punched with holes or drilled with holes, and they were actually lethal when it came to that standpoint. So anyway, these serving boards are basically about 20 inches in length and 5 or 6 inches in width, and they would serve something that you may have seen many of the waiters use in order to serve somebody across the table because they can't get around on the other side. So we've talked about various activities of that nature. Keep us in mind at A Handyman's Haven. Come on down and see us. We've come across the end of our third segment on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk in the A Handyman's Haven radio studio. So, Kent, please take it away, and we'll see you after the break, folks. Welcome back to the Hammer Time Radio Show. If I were a carpenter, how about that song? I guess I am a carpenter by trade, as they may say. I did take a carpentry, wood shop, as we called it, in junior high and also in high school. They were offered during our school sessions back in the 50s and 60s. That's last century, folks, by the way. We haven't come upon that yet. And that is something that I consider extremely valuable, not only because I just love to work with wood, but I grew up with that with my dad, who was extremely proficient in manufacturing and using almost any type of material that he could get a hold of to do whatever he needed to do for our family. Plus, it gives you a good education in math, by the way. Math that is in elementary and in junior high school. In fact, there was a school system down in Mobile, Alabama, that actually the entire school system was set up in the woodworking arena. And everybody that went to school there from elementary to junior high school was in wood shop. And they were always using math, and then they would have all the Common Core courses that are required as far as your education goes. If you'd like to give us a call here at the studio, phone number is 520-790-2040. Many of us have yearned for a cabinet in the mountains. I know we have a big mountain associated with Tucson on the north side, which is the Catalina Mountains. In Mount Lemmon, there are many home structures up in that area. Many of the folks have established a home in a White Mountain region. It's quite extensive up in that area. People are down in the Rincon Mountains. There are some minor homes close to that area. Also in the mountains to the south, there are many homes in that area also, down towards Fort Huachuca and that. So if you're yearning for a home up there, or a nice little cabin, a getaway from the societies around the metropolis areas that you may live in, there are surely a lot of areas that you can get involved with. So a lot of things to consider. If the cabin you're looking at has been constructed with or without a building permit, that would be one thing that you need to find out about. And what makes that very, very important is that 20 years or so ago, permits were not required. But today, the permits are required for any type of construction. And a lot of times, if you're going to do remodeling or adding on that require a permit, you may have to bring the entire home up to the present code in the system. It may also be a requirement, and I cannot verify this, but when a home sells, it may have to be recognized by the seller of what items that may not be up to code or may have to be upgraded upon the purchase of the home. So keep that in mind when you purchase a home, that it may not be representative of the code requirements that you are associated with when you're down in the lower metropolis cities, such as the city of Tucson, such as Pima County, the city of Marana, city of Oro Valley, Sahuarita, et cetera, et cetera. Those code requirements can become very, very expensive to accomplish. I can remember somebody a while back said that every time he turned on his dishwasher, that it popped the circuit breaker. And his solution to it was, upgrade the circuit breaker and the panel, and we're not going to do anything with the wiring associated with it. And I said, sir, if you do that, if you don't mind me stepping in here, you could burn your house down at a moment's notice. And I don't know whether he ever accomplished that or not from that standpoint. So a lot of times fires generated in the home because the circuit breaker burns out and sends different electrical charges in the most difficult ways that can create a lot of problems for you. Let's don't talk about personal injury that may occur in something of that nature. Is your cabinet, or how is your cabinet supplied with water? There may be a central water system for your source, which would be fine. If it's not, it may be on a well, which something you're going to have to find out about is what is the characteristic of the well? Is the well water going to go dry in time because the water table will be probably decreasing? So you have to be concerned with that. Or is the water being trucked in sanitized trucking containers? And I do know many people who did that on a regular basis. And so you have to be very careful with that, that the tanking system for shipping the water in is been sanitized properly, and your own tanks that you have on land, according to your cabin, are also sanitized, and you may have to purify the water from that standpoint. Not good to get contaminated water. Who knows what type of sicknesses that would create for you from that standpoint. So holding tanks and everything like that can build up algae, et cetera. How is your waste system managed? And by waste system in this case, we're not necessarily considering garbage that you may develop, paper goods, et cetera, but we're talking about the sewer system. Do you have a centralized sewer system? Or do you have a septic tank with a grease-holding tank and a leaching field? All those things are important. And today I know that there's many requirements that if your tank, your septic tank system has not been pumped in 3 years, that when you sell a house, you're going to have it pumped. I know that's something that I'm faced with in the area that I live in, is that we do have a septic tank with a leaching system. And when you sell a house, the entire system will have to be pumped and cleaned out. And if you don't have that, you could have some serious problems. Some time ago, I had the distribution box on my leaching field had collapsed, and we recognized that there was a serious problem because the entire sewerage system was backing up on every 4 or 5 days. And within about a 2 or 3 week period, I had the tank pumped about 4 times, and that's not much fun. So keep that in mind with the type of cabinet that you may be purchasing. If you're buying raw land, that may be another difficult operation. What about heating and electricity within your home? That's another extensive cabinet situation you may have. Are you using battery powered? Are you using generator power? Or are you using a combination of both? Or are you using solar power? And believe me, when the sun goes down, solar is zero. Because there's no sun. You're not going to get voltaic action, nor are you going to get any heat source for the hot water tank system that you may have. So are you chopping wood to keep warm? Just remember the wood and any chimney system you may have may collect the greases of the wood or the sap of the wood up in the chimney area. And you've heard of chimney fires, and that's another serious problem they can have. So you need to have a chimney sweep to check out your chimney to see if it's clean. Certain woods generate more sap than other woods. Pine, as an example, is a highly sap tree, and that can really contaminate your source of exhausting of the burning materials of your fire source from that standpoint. Also remember that most fireplaces are not going to keep you warm. The combustion air is going to come from inside of the house, so it's going to suck the air that's coming from the house, burn it, and send it right up the chimney. So you may have to have a special type of heat-elator system or an area that requires or a system that requires outside air, and then you can recirculate the inside air around the firebox of the fireplace in order to keep you around and have a glass enclosure over the fire burning area from that standpoint. You can use natural gas for the same thing, but you have the same problem. You need outside combustion air in order to provide you a warm air in the home. Does your cabin require repairs? That may be something else that may be important. Are the seals on the doors appropriate? And that may be of a concern. Are you going to live there permanently, or are you just going to live there during the summertime? What are you going to do about the wintertime? Who's going to do the repairs for you when they need to be accomplished? Long-distance repairing can become very, very difficult from that standpoint. Management of your place may become rather critical and can also become very, very expensive. So a lot of these things need to be considered from that standpoint. Raw land may have a lot of restrictions placed on it. So when you do buy raw land and you plan on building your own home on that land, these are some of the things that you're going to have to consider. Where are you going to get your water? Where are you going to get your electrical? Where are you going to get your heat source? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So keep all these things in mind when you get ready to build your home. Well, folks, we're coming to the end of our program, and we got a fine program coming up for you after Hammer Time. That is the Prather Point with Jeff Prather. As you know, he's our local security officer that has all the ins on everything that's going on and can really fill you in. So on behalf of Maurice from A. Henny Manshaven, transmitting in the A. Henny Manshaven radio studio on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk, we'll see you next week, folks. Have a great time. Come down and see us at the store.